I am Shondell Wilhite, and I was once a victim of sexual and domestic abuse until one day I realized that I had a problem and decided to do something about it. Then I began to shine. I spoke out and got out of that toxic relationship. H helped myself. I ignited my own fire. N, I never looked back. And E, I evolved. I am the published author of my first book entitled The Reality Behind the Illusion. And I am making a difference through my truths and inspiring lives on how to defeat giants of sexual and domestic abuse. I changed my mind about being afraid and ashamed of my past, and instead now I embrace it so that I can reach out to others and let them know they are not alone and they too can shine.
Good evening. Welcome to Shine with Shondell. This is your host, Shondell Wilhite, and we have a great show lined up for you tonight. We have the lovely Miss Cartina Jackson on with us, who is an advocate, advisor, author, and actress. Excuse me. She was a police officer that was married to a narcissistic, abusive police officer. So we're going to be talking to her tonight about how she turned her tragedy into triumph. And we are going to take this opportunity to give Cartina her accolades and congratulate her for a job well done on all the success that she's having right now since she has been free of domestic violence. So, Miss Cartina, how are you this evening?
I am doing wonderful. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here, and I just feel completely honored and blessed. So thank you so much.
You are so welcome. I guess I need to put a disclaimer in here again. I'm still coughing a bit, so I'm going to try to get through this without going into a ginormous coughing spell.
Well, that disclaimer will be for the both of us, because I think I'm struggling with it myself. So,
okay. That sounds good. So first off, I'm going to let you tell us about yourself. Tell us who you are, where you're from, and what you do.
Wonderful. Again, thank you so much for having me. I am Cortina Jackson. I'm an author, an actress, a podcast host. I'm a speaker. I'm an advocate, and I am a mentor. And that sounds exhausting, but I am so thankful, because not even 2.5 years ago, I wore none of those titles. And so I'm so thankful, because those are new titles that I wear. And the title that I wore before then was depressed, victim, suicidal woman who felt worthless. And so, yes, I'm very thankful that things have changed for me. I grew up, I'm originally from Lubbock, Texas. Just for people who are not from Texas, Texas is the biggest state to drive through. So when you hear of cities in Texas, just know that it takes probably about a good anywhere from 5 to 12 hours just to get across to another.
Exactly.
So I am from Lubbock, Texas. And to put that in perspective, it's about 5 miles east of the Dallas area. So I grew up in Lubbock to a Christian mom and dad. My entire family, everybody in my family, Christian or went to church. Even if they weren't Christian, they were expected to be at church. Mm-hmm. I was raised in the Church of God in Christ, and those are the holy rollers. Those are the ones back in the day. Things have changed. Yep. But you had to wear long dresses. You couldn't wear makeup. you had to get the Holy Ghost. So most of the service you spent on your knees crying out to God to get the Holy Ghost. So we were a very tight-knit family, very Christian-oriented family. So close with all my aunts and uncles and cousins that I didn't even have friends growing up. All of my relatives were my friends. And if I hung out anywhere, it was going to be with them, with the family.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So
yes, you know how that goes. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, you know, even though we had God in our lives at all times, seems like, that did not keep the devil away. As a matter of fact, that's exactly the target that he was after in my particular case. I ended up being molested at about 7 years old by an older cousin. And what happened is, as I'm growing up in my little group of cousins, I was the oldest girl. And mm-hmm. so I became like the mother figure for them, taking care of them. We were so poor that they depended on me. We stayed a lot with my grandmother. All of our parents worked. And so we stayed during the day with my grandmother. And because my grandmother had been burned when she was young, her mobility wasn't good. And she was about 500-600 pounds. So I had to do all the work and take care of her and take care of the younger cousins and cook for them. And so when my grandmother was unable to take care of us, an older aunt stepped in and she had a son. And that son was older than me. And so with all the children looking up to me, and me trying to entertain them, and this is where I learned how to be a writer and actor. I entertained them a lot. I would make up plays and make up stories and different things.
Yep.
But this older cousin began molesting me, and all the kids were outside playing and different things. He would pull me into the house and he would begin touching me. And I was very uncomfortable. I didn't exactly know what was going on. But I know he kept putting his tongue in my mouth, and I was so repulsed and disgusted by this. And, you know, just to smell his breath, to feel the saliva going down my mouth. Mm-hmm. I was so disgusted that to even this day. And, you know, I talk about this because I want to talk about attraction, the laws of attraction.
Yeah.
I do not like to be kissed that way. I do not like tongue kissing. And we don't realize how we carry those things over into our adulthood. Some of the nuances and things that we do, we don't understand why we do them or why we act certain ways. Or, you know, sometimes you block it out. You don't even remember exactly what happened, but you just think, I don't like that. Or I don't like when a man touches the small of my back. Or you may not remember why. But these things carry over.
And, you know, it's funny that you said that, because I'm one of those too that I don't like tongue kissing. And so now you're going to make me reflect back and try to figure out, why is that? Or is that just something that I just don't like doing? Right. You know?
Yeah.
Because I have, like, you know, with the trauma that you're talking about, I've experienced the same kind of trauma. And so a lot of times when we have the trauma, it just blocks out, you know, a memory.
Right.
Like a gap in there somewhere where it's just like something is blocked out. So it's funny to say that, because I feel that exact same way. I don't like that.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something. Mm-hmm. We don't even realize it, but it's true. And yeah, our brain has a wonderful way of protecting us from hurt and things that are tragic. So a lot of times things are blocked out, but there's a part of your body also that still remembers and it reacts to certain things. So yeah, that is very understandable of why that would happen that way.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Mm-hmm. So for this cousin that was molesting you, let me ask, do you still have communication with him? Do you still like talk to him when you see him, or are you cordial? How is your reaction towards him when you see him now?
Right. Here's the most interesting part of kind of blocking this out as we speak on that.
Mm-hmm.
So because everyone looked up to me, and let me tell you this quick story of why I still speak to him. So he was molesting me. He began putting his fingers inside me, ripping my flesh. And because everyone looked up to me, here's what changed my life forever.
Mm-hmm.
I hated what was happening to me, but I couldn't act out because, like I said, our family was so close and loving. And so one day, all of my family was in the living room, my aunts, uncles, everybody. We were just sitting around, and this cousin pulled me to him. I was walking past him, and he grabbed me and started tickling me. Well, I got so upset that I put my fingernails in his thigh, and I twisted with all my might to try to draw blood.
Mm-hmm.
Because whenever I would slap at him or pinch him or something, he would always laugh at me because it didn't hurt him. He was a heavy set guy, never hurt him. He would laugh. But this time I was set to draw blood. Well, my aunt saw me and she called me over to her in front of everybody. Mm. And she said, what are you doing? We don't act like that. We don't hit our cousins. We love our family. We do not do that. You get over there, you hug him, and you apologize. You tell him you love him. And she whooped me in front of everyone.
Mm.
So with tears in my eyes, I walked back over to him. All my little cousins watching like, oh, Tina got a whooping.
Uh-huh.
And I walked over to him, and I remember the tears were flowing because I knew, but they didn't. And I just hugged his neck and said, I'm so sorry. I love you. And gave him a kiss. And he kind of gave me this smirk, this look on his face. I'll never forget it. Mm. And from then on, I learned how to fake it. I learned how to wear what I call a clown mask, which is a symbolic mask that I wore. I vowed I would never tell anyone. I would always pretend like things were okay and that I'm all right. And when I see him, hey, I love you. Hey, how's it going? And so to this day, in order for no one to really know what happened, when I do see him, I'm like, hey, how are you? Like nothing. Mm-hmm. And I got so good at that my clown mask became a permanent fixture upon my face. So I discussed that a lot on hiding. I got good at not only hiding that, but everything else that ever happened to my life. I always wore a great big old smile, and I did whatever I could to make sure I protected everyone else. That's so strange that a person would be protective over other people.
Yep.
I wasn't concerned about myself. I hit the hurt. I could pack that down and bury it, but I feared the most what people would think if they knew the truth. You know, how would they receive that? And so I wore this mask. We see that clown, you know, I call it the clown mask. He's happy, he's joyful, he puts on a show. But many of those clowns back in the day, they suffered great injuries. They would fall on the ground to make people laugh. They would let little kids kick them in the butt. They would let people pour water on them and ha ha, I'm the clown, ha ha. And that's the way I had to live my life, with the hurt and the damage and the pain of wearing this mask.
How we are able to do that and still just kind of go through life.
Yes.
Pretending that we are okay.
Oh.
When deep down, it's just like we're screaming so loud, like, help me.
Right.
But no one can see that, you know?
You're right. No one can see it, which makes this a scary thing as we kind of move into this conversation about domestic violence, about depression. people, I think of Robin Williams and different people who committed suicide, who they were the life of the party. They were the jokesters. They were the happy ones. And so when we find out they commit suicide or some, or they're being abused, it's a shock. Like mm-hmm. you, that happened to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because we get so good at wearing that mask and hiding it. And usually the ones who are going through something are the ones who that joke around the most. They're so playful. You know, you have to kind of be aware of that, because a lot of it is a cover, and we get so good at it that we can fool the fooler. Like, we can fool anyone into thinking life is okay, things are okay, when they are tragically not. And to the person that's going through it, it's so critical, but we don't know how to call out for help. Because what will people say? Will they be judgmental? Will they blow us off? Will they say, oh, I wouldn't have taken that if I were you, which is what a lot of abuse victims hear. Why did you stay? I wouldn't have done that if I were you. But you never understand the circumstances behind what's going on.
Yes, you are so right about that. And I know how that feels personally myself, being a survivor of violence. And I know exactly what you're talking about. Exactly what you're talking about. And excuse me. And while we're talking about that, and I guess I would assume that's how you got into a lot of the acting that you do, and you're doing so well. Mm-hmm. And that every time I turn around, you're picking up these new roles, and it's just, and now it makes sense even more so to me because of the fact that you've worn this clown mask for so long that you've perfected this whole acting thing.
Right. Right. It comes so natural now.
It just comes so natural. So how old were you when you actually started dating?
So I really wasn't allowed to date till I was around 15, 16.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's when I met my first boyfriend, who actually became my husband. How deep I take relationships. I take them very seriously. And the sad part about it is, growing up, I didn't even have suitors. Wow. And so this was the hard part. My self-esteem was already low from a very young age. Mm-hmm. And the guys who did approach me only approached for sexual reasons. And yep. I began to see myself as, wow, that seems like that's all I'm good for. That's all I'm good at. That's what they told me. Oh, yeah. you're the best at that. Oh, you're good at that. So I thought, wow, that's my only tool. That's my only weapon. No one seemed to want me because I was super smart or because I was athletic or, you know, I held a great conversation, and that didn't seem to faze anyone. It was a sexual part of me that they found fascinating. So with a low self-esteem, I began to attract other things related to that. See, when you wear the clown mask, for me, the clown mask covered a dead soul. I was dead immediately. And when something is dead, scavengers look to feed off of it. So I was a prey. I was an easy prey. When you're dead inside, or when you're dead, period, you smell of death and decay. Mm-hmm. And this draws people, certain people, into your life instantly. So when you think about that, narcissists, abusers, rapists, pedophiles, manipulators, they look for people just like me because it feeds their need for power and control. So I attracted energy vampires, what I call energy vampires in my life. So these guys that were attracted to me, it wasn't so much a sexual thing as it was they smell my dead, decaying soul. Mm-hmm. And they tried me. And so it only validated, oh, men are horrible. Guys are terrible. This is all they want. Because everything that I said I didn't want to happen, it happened anyway. I was attracting that anyway, because my mask kept my dead soul buried. And we can put on makeup. I could put on, yep, do my hair. This was part of my clown paint. And yep. So sure, I can look great on the outside, and I can try to fool some of the people some of the time, but you can't fool a scavenger. They look at you. They think, oh, wow, she is beautiful. She is something. Look at that figure. Look at that body. But it's when it comes to negative people, that's not what they're looking at. They are looking through you, and they are looking at your soul. And so as long as I smelled of death and decay, and as long as I wore that clown mask, I attracted those type of people into my life. And so, yeah. Oh
my goodness. And so just, you know, just you saying that, it's so relatable, because every woman, and I'm just going to say woman because men experience it too, but I'm going to say for every woman, what you're saying and what you're talking about, these energy vampires, mm-hmm, they just sniff you out.
Yes.
Of 1,000 people in a crowd, it's just like they sniff you out. Right. And they know exactly which one to go to that they can prey on, and yes, that they can continue to just suck the blood out of you, just suck the blood out of you dry.
Yes.
And yes, to where you're just so dead and broken. Because this is the thing. I'm in this group, and I look, they sometimes they post these before and after pictures. Mm-hmm. And one myself. And when I look at that before, and I say, oh my goodness, to where I couldn't even recognize myself.
Wow. Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Where you can't even recognize yourself. So I know what you're talking about, mm, when you say these energy vampires just come along. And then when like you say, you just felt worthless, like, oh, this is just the only thing that they want me for. They just want me for sex.
Right.
You know, you can't even see how smart I am and how athletic I am and, you know, all these good things that I have going for myself. But you see that I have low self-esteem. How do you know that? How do you see that? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And so I'm just here listening to this story, and I'm just like, oh my God. Because I think we have all experienced everything that you're saying.
Yes. So
when you met, so your first boyfriend became your husband.
Right. So I dated my first boyfriend all through junior high school. We got along just fine. Then the moment we got married, things changed. I didn't see him the way he began to act, but changed. And he became abusive, especially after we had children. And I think what happened with that is once we had children, I doted on them. I paid more attention to those children than to the relationship, because I found out my now ex-husband was cheating on me. And this led into more abuse. I'll talk about how that carries over too. But yeah, the more I would find out about him, the more he would abuse me as if I had done something wrong.
Right.
And right. So, He became abusive, and I ended up divorcing him and just becoming a single parent at that time. I was very content with just being a single parent after that, because I had been through so much with him. His lies, he would lie. He would say he was going to work and would spend the entire day at his mother's house or who knows where, and would come home as if he had been at work all day. Mm-hmm. And I knew he was not working. And then the abuse began with him.
So let me ask you this. So were you already a police officer then?
No, I didn't become a police officer until my second marriage.
Okay. Okay.
Yes. Now, I've worked in law enforcement and criminal justice my entire life, since I was in my 20s. When I was with my first husband, I went to the academy to become a prison guard. And so that's how I kind of started in my life of criminal justice. And for those who have never worked in a prison, prison life is a lot of verbal abuse. It's a lot of verbal, emotional abuse daily. So when you think about a woman who already had low self-esteem, was molested, being abused at home by her first husband, and then going to work every day and hearing banging on the doors and hearing watching people cut their wrists daily. This is not sometime. These were daily occurrences.
Wow.
Spreading through feces and urine. They would cut and put their blood into the milk cartons and splash their cells with blood. And just the sights, sounds, and smells was enough PTSD by itself.
Yes.
So to carry that. So I'm just this walking fragile shell of a person, because all day I'm being abused at work, verbally, emotionally, seeing things that people don't even understand what goes on in a prison, seeing this daily, and then coming home to this. It was enough then to drive me insane.
Insane, absolutely.
So, as I moved on, when you're in an abusive situation, and I was talking about those energy vampires, when they're sucking the life out of you, you would think, a vampire, when you're watching these movies and you see the victim and they're near death, mm-hmm. and he continues to suck off of them until they are dead.
Mm-hmm.
When you are in an abusive situation, they don't just leave. You would think, if a man's abusing you and he keeps telling you, I don't want you anymore, you're stupid, you're this, you would think, well, go on then, but move on from me.
Right.
They don't move on. They will continue to suck the life out of you until you are either dead, or you definitely don't know who you are anymore. You've lost so much self-esteem, and you have been conformed to the way he treats you. You don't know yourself anymore.
Exactly.
So it makes it hard for you to move on when you don't know who you are to begin with. And a lot of women stay. They're so brainwashed at that time, manipulated by these narcissists. I'll explain that here in just a second, that you don't even know who you are anymore.
I know that feeling.
Yes.
Just get lost. You lose yourself in the relationship, because you've been called so many things outside of what your mom named you.
Right.
At birth. You just start believing that all of the things that this person or these people are telling you, it just becomes reality for you.
Yes, yes.
It becomes reality. And, it's so hard, that mental abuse is so hard getting past, because when something is in your head, it stays there.
Yes.
For so long until you decide, you know what? I'm not what this person keeps telling me that I am.
Yes.
And when you start affirming and when you start affirming yourself, that's when things start to turn around. when you start looking at yourself as being something other than, you know, worthless, you're not this or that, you know, whatever they've been calling you all this time. And it's not until then that that happens.
Exactly. So,
my God, yeah.
Unfortunately, sometimes that never happens for some women.
Exactly. You know,
there does come a time when you say that's enough and you put your foot down. But for many, that that becomes very hard, a hard escape to get out of.
So when did you meet your second husband?
Well, so then by the time, as I was saying before, our thoughts become our actions. Whatever you think about, you become. You are playing and you attract into your life, whether that's positive or negative.
Yep.
So I didn't think very highly of myself, and I attracted, you know, by the time I met my narcissistic, abusive police officer husband, who was my second husband, I was already damaged. I had no self-esteem, and I was looking for validation.
Yeah.
So I felt compatible with him. I felt safe knowing he was a police officer because police officers are held to a higher standard. I assume he would not be crazy. He won't be a con artist. He's going to have a good head on his shoulders because he's a police officer. I would have never imagined that I needed protection from him. So I watched this television show on Investigative Discovery Channel. I watch a lot of ID Channel. And the name of this show is called Evil Lives Here. Now, the show is introduced. It describes a little bit about the perpetrator of this crime that they're going to talk about on the show. And just when the story is about to unfold, or come on, a black screen appears, and there are four signs. There are four words that appear at the bottom left-hand corner. And those words are, there had been signs. So there had been signs in my life in dealing with my now abusive, narcissistic husband. See, a narcissist he's described as someone who's full of themselves, and you cannot convince them otherwise. In my case, he would have you to believe, they would have you to believe that you are lucky that they're even with you, because they could have anybody they want. Everybody wants them. Yep. And yet, here they are. This is what was told to me. In my case, the narcissist made all the money, or at least a good portion of it. So he was very quick to say, if you want to leave, go. Let's see how that works out for you. They dish out insults. They can't take any. They may fly off the handle if you joke too much or show some sarcasm. They're cocky, demanding. Now, these things I didn't see initially. The things that I did see was that he called me all the time when we were dating, all the time. And I thought it was cute. I thought it was kind of adorable. Man, I'm somebody who loves me for something other than sex. He calls me all the time. He's always checking on me. And then this is something to note as well. When you're in the initial dating stage, he wanted to know everything about me, everything, all my fears, everything I've been through, things that made me happy, things that made me sad, my deepest, darkest secrets. But he gave very little information about himself.
About himself, yeah.
When he did give information about himself, it was always something that was compatible with me.
Yeah.
So I joke about this all the time. Anything I was going through, he seemed to have the answer for it, or he had done it before. So I always say, if I said, hey, I chipped a tooth, he would say, oh, I'm a dentist. That's just how much he had to be, you know?
Oh.
He just matched up, you know. I'm telling him, I'm a Christian. Oh, I'm a Christian. I'm Church of God in Christ. Oh, I'm Church of God in Christ. Oh, you know, just so compatible, wanting to know all about me. Now, once we got married, the phone calls increased. He was no longer, I thought, checking on me, but checking up on me.
Yeah.
He got a bank account, a checking account, and he added me to the account as a secondary. So he would track all of my spending. If I bought a hamburger, he knew how much it cost, about the time I bought it, where the location I was. So he would call and joke, "Hey, you had a hamburger. You over there on Keast Road, blah, blah, blah. What are you doing today?" It became everything I did. He began to track it to the point where I would have to sneak money out the account, little small amounts, until I had enough money on me at all times so he wouldn't track my spending habits. He isolated me. He isolated me from my family. So I grew up, I was in Lubbock. He moved me to Dallas. And once we got married, and then he began to tell me, because I would call home all the time to talk to my folks. He began to tell me, you call them too much.
Wow.
You depend on your dad too much when you should be depending on your man. Mm-hmm. So it upset him greatly if I called my people too much. So I started, scaling back on calling. Maybe I shouldn't call them so much.
Hmm.
So that was the isolation factor.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Only about a month into our relationship, he hit me. It was the first time he hit me. He got upset. It was something silly. I mentioned, I don't have to eat off fine china like your family. I can eat off paper plates.
Mm.
And I kind of laughed a little bit. And when I did, he grabbed me up, kind of choked me with his forearm. I ran up the stairs. And when I did, that's when he started hitting me. Never in my face, always my body, where the bruises couldn't show or wouldn't appear. And this was the first time. And you would think, wow, the first time, girl, get out of there. And I did. I grabbed the phone. I started calling the police, and he took the phone away from me and started apologizing. I'm so stressed out. I'm sorry. This is a new marriage. This is all new for me. I'm a police officer. And then when he got through describing him being a police officer, he reminded me, and anyway, I'm a police officer in this community. Everybody here is my friends. Hey, go ahead and hang up the phone. So it became from frantic to, I'm sorry to almost this, scowl that
yeah.
I am a police officer. Yeah. How are you going to call me? So it became that. And if you ever do that again, that's it. That's it. I'm gone. No man has a right to put his hands on me.
Mm-hmm.
But this was followed up by a house. So, I'm sorry. Guess what? Surprise. I didn't want to tell you, but let me go ahead and break it to you. I'm buying you a house. And this became my way of life from that point forward. So I was being physically abused. And every time the abuse was really bad, where I was bruised or cut pretty bad, I got a gift. And the gift would be a new car, a trip, taking you on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
It was always this merry-go-round where it would be gift and great times, because when he was not abusive, he was actually a fun person to be with. He was funny. He was silly. He would say, "I love you." And so I stayed for the good times. This is something I wanted for my kids, this lifestyle. They were in a good school district, in Frisco, and very nice. We had a big home that was built. But so I took it because of my low self-esteem. This is what I call my dues. So when I got abused, I felt like I was paying dues to live the good life. The
way you were living. Oh my God.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. Did you even realize that what you were living was domestic violence?
Not at
all.
Has
the thought even crossed your mind?
The thought never crossed my mind, because there came a point where I thought, I'm going to get beat on anyway, so let me fight back. And because I would fight back, I didn't feel like I was in a domestic violence marriage. Yeah. I just thought, we fight all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I always so
that was like normal. It was like normal. This is just what we do. This is how we love each other.
Right, right. And, you know, I just learned walk on eggshells to mm-hmm. try not to make him mad. And so when he gets upset and gets mad, we're going to fight. I'm going to lose, but it's all right, because, you know, he'll be all right by tomorrow. He was almost like a Jekyll and Hyde. He could turn it on and he could turn it off like yeah. It never happened. And that was often. When he was upset, it was like he was a demon. He was mm-hmm. like somebody totally different. But when the fight was over, or a lot of times he threw me out of the house, because he would always remind me that he paid for everything. I paid for this. You get out of my house. Or I bought those clothes. Take off my clothes that I bought you. And you can go out there naked for all I care. Or every time he did buy me a gift, that's the gift he would take away from me when he was upset. So it just became a way of life, because if I came back home the next day and tiptoed in, walking on eggshells, like, you know, is everything okay? He'd be like, oh, hey, babe, I made you something to eat. You know, like nothing happened. Like it was a normal new day. Nothing.
Yeah. Like nothing happened. Like it's a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. Like,
exactly.
Oh my goodness.
So this is when I decided enough was enough. I'd mm-hmm. always wanted to become a police officer, and I decided to join the police department. I wanted to do it since I was young. I'd already worked in the prison. I was kind of used to that lifestyle. And I thought by being a police officer, it would kind of give me some power too, you know, kind of give
yeah.
me, because that's kind of what he thrived on, was the authority and the power. But I knew I would use mine for good, you know, and I felt like I would be able to protect myself.
Mm-hmm.
It was during my police days that the abuse was at its worst, because when a narcissist, they want you to applaud them. They want you to cheer for them, to uphold them, uplift them. But when you try to better yourself, yeah. you're not going to get the same thing in return.
Right.
They don't want you to be better. They don't want you to go to school. They don't want you to wear makeup and fix yourself up. That's why sometimes abusers, you come out with a little makeup on. Oh, they fly off the handle. Where do you think you're going?
Hmm.
Who are you out there sleeping with? It's they don't want you to feel any type of empowerment whatsoever. And so when I joined the police department, the abuse got so bad that right before I graduated is when he took his fingernails and cut my throat until the skin was hanging from one end to the other.
Oh my gosh.
And this was the one time I reported it, because that day we were being gassed and tased. And I was so afraid that with my open wound, the gas would get into my throat and burn me. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time I reported it. And when I did, the police department he was working at was informed, and they fired him.
Really?
They fired him. But the when they did, and they told me they were going to fire him, I begged like no other. I mean, you would have thought that you were watching this movie of a woman falling all on the floor and slobbing, just ridiculous. I look back and think, how silly of me. But at the time, it wasn't because I loved him or I wanted to protect him. A lot of police officers do not like responding to domestic violence because the woman will side back with the abuser. No, please don't take him. Don't. But it's because we have to live with that abuser when the cops are gone.
That's right.
They can't hold him forever. So we know he's got to come home, and we got to make it look like we fought for him. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of our saving grace. No, did you see me? I was telling them, don't take you. It was out of my hand. I told them, you know, so it became that. I was trying to protect me. Mm-hmm. Because I knew if I came, when he came home, or if anything was to happen of that, the abuse could be bad. I could be in a very dangerous situation. So I, you know, he ended up getting fired, and then he tried to get me fired. He wanted me off the force. And he worked day and night, every day, telling me to quit. Every day, you should quit. You need to leave that job. He would call up there and threaten the other police officers. Don't be talking to my wife. And y'all are up there sleeping with my wife. And so my plan was to finish the department, finish the police academy and leave him. He talked so much about that. And then this is when he used gaslighting. Gaslighting is when you tell somebody something every day till, you know, lies or manipulation, yep, until they became, you become insane. You, mm-hmm, you question your own sanity.
And you question it. Yeah. You're, yes, like, well, what, did that really happen?
Right.
Then you got to go back and think about, and it's just crazy because it really drives you nuts. Like, well, I really don't remember. Maybe it is true. I mean, because you're second guessing everything.
Right. Right.
Everything. It is so crazy.
It is crazy. It's scary because, too, what a person will do when they're gaslighting you is they will hide things from you. Mm-hmm. Or, like for me, he would hide my keys, hide things, and mm-hmm, then he would come out with them in an obvious place. Here they are, right here. You're losing your mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're taking on too much. You're doing too much. You need to always. This was part of the gaslighting. To make a long story short, he convinced me to quit by saying, mentioning God. God was very important to me. So the way he was able to get me was to say, God showed me a vision. I've come to my senses. God showed me I have wronged you. Oh, he was crying. He was on his knees. God showed me I was so wrong all these years, and I just want my wife back. God said he was going to heal our marriage and the two shall become one. Oh, he was preaching. Oh, my goodness, he was preaching. And, you know, I got fired, but thank you, Lord. I found a job in Houston, and I think we just need to get away and start life again. Well, by then, the kids were about to graduate. He said, you know, the kids will be out the house. It's just we're going to make a new start. I left my job. I left my police career. And I thought, well, okay, well, Lord, maybe so. I have been praying for us to, you know, things to get better.
Things to get better.
Right. So we moved to Houston. So this is further away from my family.
Yep.
When I'm in Houston, no one knows where I am. No one knows my address. My kids, he sent them to Wisconsin to go to school.
My God.
So I'm far away from everyone. No one is around. And one day I found that he had put his name on Craigslist as the cleanup man. And he was soliciting people for sex. Like, what? It's been going on for many years. I found ads back that dated back 3 or 4 years. And he was still continuing to do it now that we were in Houston.
The cleanup man.
Right. Well, as soon as I found that, because when we moved, he was this godly person, remember?
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Then all of a sudden, God was gone and he became a tyrant. He became extremely abusive. So this is where the story it takes us. I began to write a book, and that's the book that I have published now. It's called On Earth as It Is in Hell. I started writing a book. I wasn't working. I grew depressed. And one day, it was before my 40th birthday, 2 days before, he woke me up. I was greeted with a cup of coffee. Hey, it's your birthday, and I'm taking you out as soon as the Cowboys get through playing. And, you know, we had our ups and downs, but I was used to that. I was already used to abuse, a gift. So today it was a gift day. I figured, oh, we're doing pretty good today. So I was excited. On that day, he was watching the Cowboys, and I started working on my book. I had my back to him there in the living room, and I turned I turned around to look at him, to ask him a question, and he was staring at me. And his stare was very different. It was like his eyes had blacked over, and there was no white in his eyes. And I turned back around. I kept thinking, I wonder why, you know, why is he looking at me like that? So I was telling him, dear, I can't get something on the computer. I don't understand. And finally he spoke. He said, I'll help you with it in a little bit. So about an hour went by. I'm still working. Finally, I threw my hands up and I was like, I can't get it. As soon as I said that, he jumped up off the couch and he ran over to me and threw everything on the floor. My papers, my book, it was handwritten. It went scattering. My computer, he threw it on the floor and hit me on the head and knocked me on the ground. And so I'm just like, I'm confused. And he began yelling, you're so stupid. I told you I would help you later. Why are you still messing with that? So what I did, because I was afraid he was going to tear up those pages, I started scooping them up and putting them under my body and holding on to myself like I was so hurt. Because if he thought he could get a hold of those papers, that's what he would destroy. He would always try to do what he thought would destroy me. I gathered those papers up and threw them into the closet in a book bag. And I came back out the room and tried to just play it off. And when I did, he grabbed me around my throat and body slammed me to the ground. once I was on the ground, he put his arm around my neck and began to tighten the grip. And at first, he started cracking my neck real fast, like twisting my head fast. And I could hear the bones cracking. And then because he couldn't get my neck to break, he began to twist my head all the way around until I could look completely behind my back. That's how hard he twisted my head to try to break my neck. And I'm hearing the bones cracking. I'm feeling the tightness till I could no longer breathe, but I could look behind me. And I began to get the deepest sadness because I knew I was about to die. And at that moment, I thought, my parents don't even know where I live. My kids, they don't really know the address. They're in Wisconsin. No one knows I live here in Houston. And this is how they're going to find my body, if they find my body. But something told me at that moment, you are not going to die. You are not going to die. So something told me to tuck my head into my chest and fall down and get in the fetal position. When I did that, he could no longer twist my neck. So he jumped up and went in the back room to go retrieve a gun. And it was just enough time for me to jump up, grab my keys and purse. And that's when I escaped. And I was able to get away and call the police. And they arrested him. I knew he wouldn't be there long. So I had to hurry up and pack everything that I could into my car. And I grabbed my book and everything else. And I fled back to the Dallas area. And I've been here ever since. And So I escaped the death that was meant for me. And that's been it. I've been free since 2013. And it's not been easy. There was abusive times and struggles, and there were suicidal times where I thought, you know, even though you get away, you have thoughts. Maybe I should call him back and tell him I'm sorry. You know, you know, that kind of self talk. Because I had nothing. I had an air mattress and my computer and some clothes. And I said, well, man, he had all the money
I surely talk ourselves into doing that kind of thing sometimes. But then when you really, like you said, you really have to think about what it was, that last one, like what made me leave? Why am I here now? And you have to keep replaying that moment in your head.
Yes.
In order for you not to go back. And you know, the story has just been so compelling, and we're down to the bottom of the hour, but I do want you to talk about all the great things that you're doing right now.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, you are on fire.
Oh,
you on fire.
Oh, I'm so happy. Y'all, the best part of this whole story, I know it's very tragic, but the thing about it is that things will come back to you. If you, the same way I attracted bad, you can attract good, and things will come back to you that you have lost. It's not all loss. So I began to, I contemplated suicide one day, and I was actually going to do it. And I did a video, suicide note. And I began to, and when I posted it on Facebook, I got so much love and encouragement that I decided to be positive. Every day I would say nothing negative ever, ever, ever. Not, I'm going to burn this food, or, I'm going to be late for work. I could never say anything negative. Yeah. And I did that. And on the fifth day, I wrote down in a journal everything I wanted to happen in my life. Well, I've always wanted to act. I had no experience whatsoever. I wanted to be on the radio. I wanted to be a speaker. I wanted to be these things. So I wrote them down. And every day I would say, thank you, God, that I'm an actress. Mm-hmm. Thank you that I'm a speaker. And I got my first role in a movie called Beneath the Scar. The movie was the character I played was a woman being abused by her police officer husband.
Wow.
Yes, I couldn't even believe it. And from then on, every day, every single day, no matter how small it was, I would always say what I was thankful for, even though I didn't have it. Mm-hmm. I remember going to that audition, and I had about $20 to my name, but I would say, thank you for, thank you for the role. Thank you for my next role. And you all, that was in, that was 2 years ago. I have consistently been in a movie every month since 2 years ago. And I keep getting calls. I just this year alone, I've been booked for my eighth movie, and I finally landed the, I've been playing a lot of supportive roles. I have the lead role of a movie coming out in December. I've lost count how many movies, commercials.
Ain't God good? God good. Oh my goodness.
I am getting a call about a new movie, and I got the opportunity, you know, being able to speak and tell my story, and then launching a new website where I'm able to mentor others that, you know, what you say, there's power in your words. If you say you can't do it, if you say you won't make it, you are correct. You will not.
Will not.
I always attract bad men. Oh, you always will.
Always will.
Whatever you say, the power in your tongue. Mm-hmm. Say nothing negative. And even though you don't have it, say you're thankful for whatever it is you want. I'm a rich woman. Oh, I say it all the time. I'm rich. I am successful. I am an actor.
Me too.
Every day. Every day.
It's what you attract. Words.
Absolutely.
Words absolutely.
Oh, for sure. And absolutely. It happens. And I tell people, you know, you must have love. You must forgive. I have forgiven him. I don't want to see him. I don't want to be with him anymore.
You don't have to, and you don't have to.
You forgive people not for them. It's for you.
Absolutely.
You can't hold on to that. I was almost killed by this man, but you know what? I forgive him. And my life is wonderful. My life is wonderful. I've moved on. And that's what you got to do. It's an abuse. I know it hurt. I know you had to file bankruptcy. I know you had to do this and that. It doesn't matter. Let it go. It does matter. It hurts. You are justified for feeling the way you feel. But if you want to move on and you want to be successful, because see, he's moved on. He's happy with somebody.
Oh, yeah.
If you want that for yourself, forgive him. And you must be positive. You must be grateful. And so, yes, indeed. I'm very happy in my life at this time.
And, you know, congratulations on everything that you are doing. You know, I see it all the time. Every time you post it, keep posting all of this great news, because I see it. And I'm just so happy for you, and I'm so proud of you. So we have a minute. So let us know where we can find you or when your next show is going to be. Give us some information on how we can see you or how we can contact you.
Please, everything is located on my website at www.cortinajackson.com. My upcoming movies, you can hear my podcast there, and there's links for you to find me for the podcast if you'd like to be a guest. I am a speaker, so you're able to kind of see my story there on my website as well. Book me for speaking on domestic violence, sexual abuse, and moving from tragedy to success. Facebook at Cortina Jackson, go to Twitter at Tina the Writer, Instagram Miss M-I-S-S Miss Tina _ the Writer. Follow me, join me. I love people. I'm so happy to connect with wonderful souls. So thank you. Yes,
I love it. Thank you so much, Cortina, for just being with us tonight and sharing your story. Oh my God, you are such an amazing lady. We are at 8 o'clock now, so it's over. It's over. I hate it, but
I know it.
We have got to go. Thank you again for tuning in to Shine with Shondell, and meet us again here next week at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. We'll see you then. Have a good night. Thank you.